Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome to another wonderful evening of broadcasting right here on LA Talk Radio. You are listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host with the most, Jim Christina, and sitting in for my co-host, Russ Avison, who decided he didn't want to be on the show tonight. But hi, Russ. But we have Richard here instead. Mr. Richard Polinelli, not only is he a good friend, but he's also an ex-co-host of The Writer's Block. He's my business partner, and he's back tonight with his clown shoes. Hi, Richard.
size 15 clown shoes at that, yes. I am the Russ Avison of another, of a different universe is what that is.
That is true. Yes. That is true. Richard writes dystopian science fiction novels. Much in your vein, my dear. So, and if she's nodding, our guest tonight is nodding and smiling, and she has yet to get a drink, but I'm sure by the time this show is over with, she's going to be half soused with the rest of us. So we have adopted a religious thing around here is that we all praise God and then have a drink before the show starts. Mm-hmm. So anyway, good to see you, Richard.
Well, it's good to be back on again. It's been a while since I've been in the co-host chair, but couple of months since I've been in on the show.
That's okay. You know what's really great about the Skype thing is that we can see each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will give JP a warning that when you see the one finger go up, this is not to include the other finger that might go up, but it's the one finger that goes up. And that means that we have 1 minute to commercial or we can break early. It just depends on what we're doing. And then I'll always put a finger up when it's one minute to commercial and we have three of during the show, okay? And the last one, of course, is one that you know well. It's Creative Edge.
Yes.
Yes, we do know that. And, of course, I will be seeing you again tomorrow.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
Oh, me either. Along with all the other wonderful persona that show up. The tutti persone. Okay. Our guest this evening... should she decide to admit the fact that she is on our show to her friends and family, is a writer that she writes the supernatural, kind of a paranormal vein. She kind of likes that type of thing, a dystopian type universe that no one lives in but her and her brain. It's J.P. McLean. She is best known for her urban fantasy series, The Gift Legacy, of which tonight's book is one. And the other two, of course, the three books in The Gift Legacy are Secret Sky, Hidden Enemy, and Burning Lies. And they reprise three books in a series of The Gift Legacy. She is a... Oh my gosh, she's got honorable mentions at the Whistler Independent Book Awards. One of her short stories earned honorable mention from the Victoria Writers Society. I should mention also that JP lives in outside of Vancouver in a little island. She's her house and a store, and gas station, and four beaches, and that's pretty much it. She's a graduate of the University of British Columbia's Sauder School of Business and makes her home in the coast of British Columbia. She writes best when she's within sight and sound of the water, even if it's just a fountain. I like that.
So true.
Fontana. There you go. And hopes never to stop reading, writing, or imagining the impossible. When she's not writing, you'll find her cooking dishes that don't look anything like the recipe. My wife does exactly the same thing. She has no, I have never eaten a meal that she has cooked that looks anything like what it looked in the picture. Or arguing with weeds in the garden, and me, I just use hand grenades. I don't have to argue with them at all. Okay, please welcome to the Writer's Block for her first visit with us, and hopefully not her last, Miss J.P. McLean.
Why, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Our crowd finally woke up.
Well, everybody, clap.
Oh, there's a crowd.
This, just as where we say thanks for the clap.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I mean, it should be an honor that you gave us the clap. Okay.
And it's
we're going down early.
Well, the show only works when we're in studio.
You together. Know, I remember I warned you the other night, live radio, anything can happen and off times does. Okay. And we do have a sense of humor on this show, and we try to display it, and we have a good time, and we hope you do as well.
Yes, I intend to.
Well, Richard did get a chance to read your book, so he's going to ask you basic writing questions. I did read your book, and I have to say, I am not a big, huge fan of dystopian, like, paranormal-type novels, but I really liked this book. And I liked it because your heroine is really, really, really a cool chick. She's so confused as to what she's supposed to be doing. Any chick that can learn how to fly and then crash into the concrete in a park, she's got my vote. Name of the book, of course, is A Secret Sky. And why don't you take a few minutes and kind of let our listeners in on what the book is about.
All righty. Glad to. Well, Secret Sky, the series is about a secret society of people who can fly, as you may have guessed. And the protagonist throughout is a young woman whose name is Emmeline Taylor. And she starts out the series not actually knowing that she can fly. She knows she's losing gravity, so she knows something's wrong and awkward and dangerous, but she doesn't know why. And an early attempt of hers to try to control it causes her to fall from the sky. And it's in the hospital where she meets a doctor who recognizes the second lens in her eyes that marks her as one of them, a flyer, because he's also one of them. And because it's a secret society and the doctor doesn't know who she is or where she came from, he puts her in the hands of others who are like her. And they teach her how to fly and introduce her into the secret society. But she soon learns that they're keeping secrets from her. Their kind are ruled by a Soviet-style tribunal, and powerful organizations know about them. They're hunting them, and flyers like her have gone missing. Only one has escaped, and he returned, missing an eye and its will to live.
Okay. I don't know about you, and I don't know about, well, I know about Richard, but I don't know what his dreamscapes look like. But I have often dreamt that I could fly. And I think everybody has that dream. They have a religion called Ekankar that takes that whole thing, the dream flying, and makes it real. And I don't know why they do it, or I have no clue, but Ekankar really is a real religion, and it's based on out-of-body flying, out-of-body experiences and flying and such and such and such. But your heroine, of course, her father dies when she is 12, and she is given a gift by an old man that she doesn't know. And it turns out that he has given her the gift of, I guess, for lack of a better word, the Magi. Of course, they didn't show up with three camels and, you know, incense and mirror. But she of course, now can fight gravity, and she's learning how to harness her abilities. And, of course, you had to put sex in this book. I don't see how you could have avoided it.
Oh, that's good to know.
But I have to say that I don't want to give away anything, because there's you have so many things in there, that Easter egg, they're peppered throughout this whole book. But it's such a fun read. And I hesitate to go even to the end of it, because the end of it kind of leads into the next book. And so I just, no, don't do that, you know. But I do have to say that Emmeline is really a great character, as are a lot of the characters in this book. And the question I have for you is, where did you come up with some of these characters? Because you had to have thought long and hard to come up with some of them.
I did, and the surprising one at the end was truly a surprise to me as well, because I was flying by the seat of my pants when I wrote this particular one. But you actually raised a really interesting point about the dreams, because that's where this came from. I dream of flying. I dream either I'm prone or I'm hovering, And it's uh-huh. that sensation that I really wanted to capture in the uh-huh. book, that feeling of flying. And so, you know, when I was thinking about the characters, you have to, she has to have a foot in each world, like a foot in the everyday to day world. And right. that is a young girl called Molly. And then she also has to have a foot in the fire world, and that becomes Eden. Right. Who becomes her mentor sort of in right. that world. And then there, you know, there have to be bad people placed right. into there as well. So yeah, just in terms of the development of the characters, just trying to figure out what would motivate each of these characters to behave in the way they did uh-huh. is the biggest factor for me when you're creating characters.
Well, it amazed me is the way you develop them, and then the society. There are some that are immediately you think are bad news, and they turn out not to be. And there's some that are like people in real life. They come in, they talk nice to you, and they pat you on the back, and they turn out to be total shitheads. So, you know, I you got a bunch of real life stuff in there, but it's just like her travels through this society is amazing, and I really like, and your dialogue. Oh my God, your dialogue is so good.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's so fun. I love dialogue.
Oh, me too. And you know, it's funny you should mention the fact that this book you dreamt, the flying, because I wrote a book, Jonah Blue, Richard, mm-hmm. and it was a total dream. The entire book from start to finish was a dream I had. And I woke up one morning and I wouldn't go away. Usually when you have stories that you dream about, they wake up and you go, wait, but what was that? And this story would not go away. It was there. And so it had to be put down. And consequently, it's sold a lot of copies. So, ooh, yeah, I know. But it actually is used in colleges for in the history.
Is it?
Yeah, because it's about mountain men, and there's a lot of stuff that a lot of research I had to do on the mountain men and the Rocky Mountain free trappers and.
Oh, that's impressive! That's impressive. Congrats! That's really great.
Thank you. I do know the dreaming of the storyline and the dreaming of the stories, and even a little bit of it can make a hell of a story. And Richard, I think you've dreamt a few of yours as well.
Well, you've read Escaping Infinity, and that was right. based on a dream, and that. One little bit of a dream of being trapped in a hallway turned into this monster sci-fi novel that took off like crazy a few years ago. So yeah, I mean, for writers, the dreaming is where a lot of our stories are born, I think, and I think you would agree with that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and I think sometimes too the solutions when you're writing and you're having you're stuck at a point and you can't quite figure out how to get out of it. If I'm going to sleep, I'll be thinking about that as I go to sleep, and then sometimes when I wake up, I'll have the answer. Something will fall into place the next day, and it'll be because I thought of it just before I went to sleep.
Right, yeah. Right. I do that as well. If I can't get to sleep, I'll think of a plot line or a character in a plot. And usually I'll wind up going to sleep and then I'll dream about that character. Good, bad, or indifferent. That's how I came up with Jefferson Greeley. And that's how I came up with Caleb Stringfield. And a lot of the characters that I write about, they came in dreams, or the essence of them came. I mean, they didn't have a name at the time. But I totally get that. And you're such a prolific writer. You've got so many books out there.
I do. I've got 7 books. The series is actually 6 books long now.
But oh, is it? Seventh, okay.
Yeah, and the 7th book is I took the first book in the series and I rewrote the first book from Jackson Delaney's perspective. And he is Emmeline's love interest in book 1.
Right. Right.
And of course, at the end of the book, you kind of wonder what motivated him to do what he did at the end of that book. So the book called Lover Betrayed is all about his story and where he came from, and why he did what he did. It actually starts a little bit before Secret Sky and ends a little bit after Secret Sky.
Okay. And Richard, Jackson Delaney is they had sex.
Oh, no, not that. I actually had a reviewer get on me because I had sex in the book. This book has sex in it. Like, whatever.
Surprise.
You know what? We're lucky Bobby Jean isn't with us tonight, because she would be gushing but asking all the sex questions.
Yeah, she's our go-to sex question.
She is our go-to sex person.
the entire series is urban fantasy, correct?
Yes.
Okay. For a while I was editing a website. We were dealing with urban fantasy, and we went through all the states and a lot of countries, the urban legends. And there was one that, as you were talking about how this first book was put together, it reminded me of a video that was shown down in Mexico. It looked like a woman flying through the air. And I was wondering, do you get any ideas or any inspiration from some of the urban legends that are out there and incorporate them into your writing?
Not from urban legends, I couldn't say, but I certainly took inspiration from some books I was reading at the time, especially books about witches, because witches often can fly. So I
love them.
Definitely take inspiration from that. And shortly after, I saw a music video by Harry Styles, and he's flying in it. And I was so taken by that, I embedded it on my website, because I thought, that's the perfect video for this book.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I did not see that, but I did go through your website. We're going to come back. We're going to take a real quick break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes, right after this real short word from LA Talk Radio. Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com. Find the link that says be a host and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say. And if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com. And listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio. Oh my goodness, it is now 6:17, and we are in the studio, of course, with our guest tonight, Ms. J.P. McLean, and on her books, her first book, actually, Secret Sky. And if you want to call and talk to J.P., the number here in the studio is 323-302-0815, and you can call and you can actually talk to the real J.P. McLean, and she'll, I'm sure, talk back to you, and she'll really talk back to you.
That's good,
I'm sorry, 323-203-0815. I keep getting those numbers. I must be Lex Disick.
That's an error on the host. That's one.
323-203-0815. Okay. And you know, we are the only, you're going to find other writers' blocks if you search us online. But they're podcasts. We are the only one that goes out live radio every Thursday. And we have a bunch of people that listen, but we also have a podcast available. But if you want to get the word out, this is the place to come, because we not only have a great time on the air with our guests, but they also, the podcasts are available, and everybody just listens to them over and over again because there's so much fun.
And there's a cheering crowd.
I'm sorry?
And there's a cheering crowd. Yeah.
There you go. And there's a lot of people that listen. Okay. What got you into writing? I'm always interested to hear a writer and an author come answer that. And bear in mind that this show is geared towards new writers.
Oh, okay. Well, what got me into it was being down south in your country for a number of years. I actually spent 2 years in Mexico and 3 years in Tucson, and coming home from that to the West Coast, which is fondly known as the Wet Coast. It's very much like right. Seattle weather. It was the first winter, and I was sitting in the living room, and the husband was watching hockey, and I was thinking, how on earth am I going to pass my time this winter on the heels of all that sunshine and warmth, looking out at the rain and the waves and the crashing wind.
Right.
And I had decided, because I had been reading so much urban fantasy, I thought, well, I'm going to try my hand at a scene, just one scene, because I really never thought I'd ever have an idea big enough for a book. So I just started with one scene, and I thought about the dream of flying. And I had Emmeline, who wasn't Emmeline then because she didn't have a name. I just had a woman jumping off the deck and flying down the coast. And I I love playing with words. So I kept playing with the words, trying to make that woman jumping off the deck a realistic portrayal of someone who would do that. And as I started writing that scene, it got tighter and tighter, and I quite enjoyed it. And then I thought to myself, well, wait just a second. Step back. No one's going to jump off a deck. No one's going to jump off a deck. They either have to know that they can fly. And if they know they can fly, someone has taught them how to fly. You don't just wake up one day and fly. So right. Then I started building the story around how that woman ended up doing that. And that first scene actually isn't even in the book. In the end, it didn't make it into it. But I did learn a very valuable lesson, and that was that you don't have to have the whole story in your head when you start to write. You can start with just that one scene.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And a lot of writers, you know, myself included, they have ideas that have been banging around in their head for a long time. And one day, just like I did, you just sit down and you say, okay, I'm going to tell this story, which is what my creative writing teacher always said. Just sit down and tell your story. It doesn't have to be good. We have editors. We have proofreaders. We have all these people that can help you. Just tell the story. And that story turned out to be The Hunter, and that Hunter turned out to be 13 books.
Wow.
In a series. So, and then we have Jonah Blue. We have Jefferson's Chance, and I have a book of poetry, and I mean, all kinds of stuff. It was 2009. So what was I, 59 when I wrote my first novel. So
yeah, that's one thing I try to tell a lot of new writers. People who are talking about writing, and they're like, oh, I'm too old to get started. You're never too old to write your first book.
No, you're never. Never. However, don't expect to publish it or get it published and then sit back and reap the rewards, because we always recommend on this show, never give up your day job.
Yeah, because it's so true.
Because if you're thinking you're making money off a book, I got a hot flash for you. You may make some, but not enough to live on, unless you're John Sanford or Craig Johnson, or actually two people we've interviewed on the show
before. Yes. Or Tosca Lee.
Or Tosca Lee, yeah.
Tosca's
a great chick, too, I might have to say.
She just says, I'm going to release a book in 2 months, and she's already made a million. So, you know.
I know. Wow. Well, her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about Tosca.
Speechless.
But anyway, you have set a lot of people. I've read some of your reviews on your books, and people love your work. Absolutely love your work. And I was looking at your reviews and your ratings, and nothing dropped below a 4. And I thought, oh wow, that's really good. That's really good.
Yeah, I'm very happy about that.
I bet you are. I mean, we've had people on this show that, you know, they live for ratings, and we tell them, don't do that. Reviews don't read those reviews, especially if they're bad, because how many shows do you like on TV that critics hate but you love?
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing. And so we say, don't believe your reviews, but yours were all good, so you can believe them all. They're great.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you've got nothing but 4s and 5s, just, you know.
Yeah, you're golden. You know, write another book. What the hell? You know, you get another 5. We'll give you a 5. But
I'm thin skin for a writer, though. I must say, when I know there's a new review up, or someone tells me there's a new review, and I'm always so nervous about going in and taking a look at it, because I'm just waiting for that, you know, one that everyone tells you you're gonna get. That will just break your heart and crush your soul, and you know, make you not want to write ever again.
Yeah, those tend to pop up, but you know, there's an interesting tell with those, because some of them online, and they're mad about that, and this is their way they're going to get back at you. They've never read your book, and you just ignore those. Right. I've had one where the guy listed 10-point bullet points of what was wrong with the story, and I'm reading it. And I'm like, you didn't read this story, because none of that happened in this book. So you've got to kind of look carefully at some of these 1s and 2s and shake them off. And then even those that where the person is honestly not happy with what they read, you can, if you keep an open mind, you can read that review and you can find something that you can use for your next project to make that one a little bit better.
Yeah, little nuggets. Absolutely. Yeah.
Consequently, when you are reading reviews, and we had a guest on that, she lived for reviews. I mean, she absolutely lived for reviews. That was Peggy. And no way were you going to get her out of that slot that she had put herself in. And then she would go on Facebook, and I'm not going to write it anymore because people don't like my stuff. And, you know, I get crappy reviews. Well, everybody gets crappy reviews. Come on. You know.
Part of the program.
Well, everyone but you.
Except for you, apparently. So I'm now getting jealous over here.
How long have you been writing, you know, year-wise?
I've been writing for 10 years. We got back
10 years.
Yeah, for 10 years. And I typically put a book out a year, typically. The first book took a lot longer, though, I must tell you. And I've been trying to write short stories. Now, short stories are really difficult to write. So
yes, they are.
They are. And I'm writing a short Christmas story right now. And it's taking me forever. I can't believe how long.
Yeah, it's short stories. I don't like short stories only because I can't develop a storyline in a short story. It's just, and I noticed, and reading your book, I have to say that you write a lot of the same way that I do. You don't over describe. Which is it really makes the reader a lot easier to read. You're descriptive to the point where you see what's going on, but not so over descriptive that you spend six pages describing the fender on a Buick. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And there are writers that do that. I mean, Dostoevsky was one. Yeah. I mean, you know.
But the advantage to that, by not over-describing, by leaving a little bit of room for the reader, the individual reader, to fill in the blanks, you're drawing them more into the story.
Exactly.
By doing that.
Exactly.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, when I put the cover on the Secret Sky, when I recovered it with the woman's picture on there, I had a lot of people say, well, wait, that's not what she looks like.
But we don't know what she looks like. Everybody is, she looks different to everybody.
Apparently she doesn't look like the cover.
Well, I mean, your cover, she looks like a nun, but you know, and she's hardly,
because she was getting none.
Well, she wasn't not getting none, I'll tell you.
Where's Bobby Jean when we need her right now?
I know, Bobby Jean. And she actually, before Ronan called you, he Bobby Jean was on the line. So
okay.
She's probably listening, so he can say hi, Bobby Jean.
Hey, Bobby Jean. Miss you. Wish you
well,
were here.
You know what? We're getting close to another break, so why don't we go ahead and do that? We heard, you're listening, of course, to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block, and we'll be back with you in just a moment, right after the short word from Tuscany Bay Books.
Congratulations, you finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it? Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick it in the drawer with the other six or seven. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books? See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf so your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com. Your answer to getting your book published. And right now, we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books.
And we are back. And we are, of course, in the studio with our guest tonight, J.P. McLean, and with Richard Polinelli sitting out there in good old Fruta, Colorado.
Yes.
And nobody's in LA. No one is in LA. We are international tonight. We have a Canadian author with us, eh? And if you want to call and talk to her, the number here in the studio is 323 203-0815. And again, get a pencil. This number is 323-203-0815.
We got to call. We got to call the bookie and tell her to cut you off. Okay, you've had enough already.
Why? I had two fingers on the rocks. That's it. That's all I've had for the last 3 weeks. That's all I've had. So I'm good. My nose is stuffy, but I'm good. Okay. So when you develop, you wrote this book, Seed in Your Pants, correct?
Yes, the first one I did for sure.
Yeah. Okay. And then you outline.
I did.
After that. Okay. Do you find outlining somewhat stifling?
No, because I don't let the outline guide the story so much as I let what's happening guide the story. So I have the outline so that I have the points the beats that I want to hit.
Okay.
So I'll know, you know, that escalating and as it's escalating where I'm going to hit. But if I get to a scene and as I start writing it, other ideas come in that scoot it off in a different direction, I'll change the outline. I won't change where it's going, but I'll change the outline.
Sure.
But I find that, especially with the series, I rewrote that first book so many times. And what I discovered was without an outline, it was really difficult to know what else needed to change in the story when you're moving scenes around. Uh-huh. And so I became better at planning them out so that if I did have to change something, having the outline really helped identify what needed to change. And I actually went back to book one and wrote the outline after to make it easier for all of the other books, because the series, because there are so many different storylines going on and different characters, it really gets hard. It's very difficult to keep track of everything without having some kind of structure in place. For me anyway, I'm the kind of person that needs that structure in order to keep track of everything.
Go ahead.
I was just going to jump in and say, now when you sit down to start, do you just start from the beginning and work your way to the end? Is that the process you use?
Generally it is, but that doesn't always happen that way. Because if I get stuck, I will often flip ahead and write another scene. Sometimes I write a little bit of the ending so that I have a more solid idea of where it's going to. But yeah, I mean, generally I do write from start to finish. But every once in a while, if I write myself into a corner going off where I shouldn't have, or where I should have, I'll have to go back and fix other things to make it make sense. Uh-huh. I did a lot of that with book one.
Well, my first fiction mentor was Jerry Fleet back in the before time. I mean, we're talking 83-ish. And one thing that she recommended was to write your opening chapter, write your final chapter. And then that way, as you go back and you start working your way toward the ending, if you start going off like that, you have this anchor out there that you know, okay, we're going to go over here for a while, but we've got to get back to here. And it's something that stuck with me all these years. And it's something I always do. I always go first chapter, last chapter. And now let's see what happens in between.
Feeling the blanks.
Yeah. And I always ask, authors, do you just go A to B, or do you go A and then Z, and then let's see what happens as we meander around? But we know we got to get here at some point. So it's interesting to see the different approaches authors take to doing this.
And I've noticed that a lot of the authors we talk to, myself included, and you, Richard, your characters oftentimes dictate what's going to happen in the middle of the book. They will let you know if you're doing something right or something wrong. and it's almost like they live in your head.
Definitely.
And as you're writing them, or even dialogue, as you're writing their dialogue, you'll hear this little on your shoulder, I would not say that. And you go, okay. Then you have to go back and say, okay, wait a minute. That's not how he's right. He wouldn't say that.
Yes.
You know, and you find yourself, and then when you get to the end chapter, you go, wait a minute, this doesn't lead up to this.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have to rewrite the last chapter, but we're kind of there. Yeah. I did that with a book called Eastern Men, and I wanted all these characters to come together in Tombstone at the same time. And it was rough trying to get them all there, but I managed to do it. And it was a very comical scene, but doing it throughout the entire book, leading them all, they all had the same problems on the trail. Flash floods and bad weather and Indians and Apaches, and they all had the same problems, but not together, you know? I agree with Richard. First chapter, last chapter, and then hope that you wind up where you're going to wind up.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
But oftentimes you don't.
True. I remember first hearing someone, an author, talk about the characters leading the way and the characters take the story in other directions. And I remember at the time thinking, they're nuts. That can't possibly be true. And then didn't it happen to me? And it was such an aha moment,
right?
To see that actually does happen. And if I talk to my friends about it, they think I'm nuts. But writers know.
You know, the deal is you don't even know they're doing it until you're done with the story. And then you look, if you do an outline or if you're a pantser, I mean, I have to go through and I have to write down the name of everybody in the book because I can't remember. You know, I get a lot of bad guys, good guys. I get a lot of people to show up. And I'm going, oh, wait a minute, what was this guy's name again? You know, I have to thumb through. Okay, yeah. Cotton, that was his name, Cotton.
Have you ever written a story where you have in mind who the two main characters are going to be and a third character takes over the whole shooting match?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that happened. You go read the Timeless series, and Long John Singapore was not supposed to be the primary character, but he took over.
Yeah, in Secret Sky, Delaney, the main character, main male character, didn't turn out at all like I thought he would. And another character who played a little bit of a bit role ended up taking over the main role for the series. Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was rather disappointed because I had put a lot of effort into presenting Jackson as, a fairly yummy character. And and in the end, the character who I didn't describe as terribly yummy ended up being the yummy character.
Yeah.
Best laid plans.
Yeah. People look at us crazy when we say that this happens. And, you know, every author I talk to, I go, hey, do you ever have a story do this? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, Richard and I wrote a book together. And it's I don't know that I would do it again. I would do it with Richard because he was very easy to work with. But it's called Last Lonely Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about two lawmen that wind up chasing the same guys through happenstance, and they wind up hooking up together in this little town in Kansas, and they wind up together, and they're reluctant, they don't like each other at the first, and they become reluctant friends and then kind of begrudging friends, and then at the very end of the book, which is something that surprised even me, when I wrote the last chapter of the book, I made the one guy from Texas show up at the last moment possible and took care of business. But Richard and I had a great time writing that book. He wrote the first two or three chapters, and then I'd get it and I'd write the next two or three chapters. But the trick is you had to make a mesh, and it had to appear as though it's one writer writing everything. And apparently it worked because we got some reviews that said, man, this writer's really good.
Yeah.
That's impressive. That would be difficult to do because you'd have to know your writing style really well.
It is hard to do. Yeah. It is very hard to do. But we got our dialogue down pat. Our dialogue was right there. And we had a good time writing it. So now I'm taking the character JP or JB Armstrong, which is a real Texas Ranger. And I'm writing a book about him called Ranger. And he's going to get in some trouble, which he's already in trouble. But,
Tombstone earlier, and I've been to Tombstone.
Yes, Tombstone is a great town.
I had fun there. Big bar.
Great party town. Oh, my God. Well, if you're there in a weekend, you could party with all the bikers because they go there during the weekends.
Oh, do they?
They go on to Big Nose Kate's, and they go on to what's the other big saloon there? Crystal Palace.
Ah.
They go into that one too, which is exactly the way it looked back in the 1880s. The Crystal Palace looked exactly like that.
Wow. Yeah, fun place, fun place. We enjoyed our time in Tucson. It was, we went to the old West Studio.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's all gone now.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's destroyed. It got destroyed a couple years back.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, that's where they filmed High Chaparral.
Yeah, that's right. That's
great, great studio. Yeah. But at any rate, well, you know what? It's another break time. So just hang tough. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to watch you and make sure you don't disappear on us. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is, of course, is the Writer's Block. And we'll be back right after this brief word from Creative Edge Publicity.
Hi, Jim Christina here for Creative Edge Publicity. And you know there's a reason that authors flock to Creative Edge? Yes, it's true, and no one would believe it, but it is true. Creative Edge, the grassroots publicity firm that has stayed community-minded, is growing. And not only growing, but busting right out of their seams. With a client base of over 70 authors, 2 New York Times bestsellers, 6 USA Today bestsellers, and multiple international bestsellers and award winners, Creative Edge in 4 years has become one of the mainstays in the publicity book market, offering reader-focused opportunities in all levels of media, including podcasts, radio, TV, print, and much more. When it comes to publicity, Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge are experts in the book industry. Look him up at www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future.
And we are back. And of course, Creative Edge is my publicist, and he's JP's publicist as well.
That's right.
We're going to have an online soiree with him tomorrow with a bunch of his authors.
Yeah,
and we have some new ones that we get to meet. You know what? We're almost out of time. We have about 8 minutes.
My goodness, that went fast.
Flies by, doesn't it? So wow. I'm going to ask you the question. You've already answered it, I think, partially, but I will ask you the question anyway. The name of this show is The Writer's Block. Apparently, you've had writer's block before. How did you get out of it? Well, we know partially you go to write new stuff, but when you can't do that, how do you get out of it? And if you do, and if you don't, okay.
Yeah. Well, I feel very fortunate that I've never had it for a prolonged period of time. Usually it's I can't get myself out of a scene, or I can't get the bridge between two scenes, or I can't figure out how to start the book. So generally what I do is I walk away from it for a little bit. That usually helps. I go into that garden, like you said, and beat the weeds back and cook stuff that doesn't look like it's supposed to. And usually an idea will surface. And if not, I keep writing other parts of the book. And sometimes I can I just put it aside and start outlining something else, like the next book in the series, or a little bit later in the book, I'll maybe put subpoints down below scenes that I was going to fill out later. And I just find that the ideas will eventually come. They just pop up.
Okay. Well, that's an honest answer. Mm-hmm. I mean, we call it writer's pause.
I like that.
Yeah, and it's oft times, and I'll go and do something entirely different. During one of my writer's pauses moments, I dug out. Actually, I got from the Library of Congress something I had sent in 1983. And it was everything that the music, lyrics, and poetry I'd written since 1967 to 1983, and got them all back from – it took 2 months and $240 to get it back from the Library of Congress. But I got it back and put them all in book form and published them. And it's, the book is called That's All You Get, and that was absolutely joy to do. Now, and then I was able to go back to the book I was writing on, and it worked out just well. I do know that sometimes you have to move totally away from what you're doing.
Yeah.
And put your mind elsewhere.
Yeah, listening to music is something else that I've found helps. If I go for a long walk, I'll often be listening to a playlist as I go along, and the ideas kind of creep in. They sneak in the side door. You don't even know they're there until you sit down and go, ah, okay.
Yeah. I find that when I'm writing, because I write a lot of bloody and gory scenes. I do. That's my way. And my catchphrase is, if you're looking for Louis L'Amour, you're not going to find him here. But I find that listening to rock and roll, Doobie Brothers is the best because they get the juices flowing.
Yeah, they're good.
China Grove and a lot of the other songs that the Doobies did that just were moving. Yeah. And that gets me in the mood to write battle scenes and, you know, fight scenes. And
Find you listen to different music to inspire you for different
scenes? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, me too.
Absolutely. Yeah. When I was writing a book called The Return about Arizona cowboys being out of their element in Louisiana and floating down the swamps in a P-row, I was listening to Cajun music. And it really sets the tone because you don't understand a word they're saying because they're speaking Cajun, which is a combination of French and Canadian and English and Spanish and the language absolutely makes no sense whatsoever, but they speak it. And that's what got me through that book. But then there was a piece of music that Bobby Jean mentioned, Carbana. I don't remember. It's some symphony that's like really evil. And when I wrote the first part of that book called The Dark Angel, that's what she reckoned it to be like. She'd sit down a glass of wine and play that music, and you know, she got the whole thing. It's about a demon.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Demons and cowboys, they don't mix. But yeah, I get that. You know, it's change your mood, and sometimes that's just all it takes to break the spirit. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah, music's a big one. I like Copperhead Road. You know, I like the build up in that song. It starts low and then it builds up and builds up and builds up. And then you just want to, you know, take it and run.
Right. I found REO Speedwagon's pretty good, too, to get me motivated to.
Oh, yeah.
I like them anyway. So, you know, there's some really good bands out there now that are doing cover tunes of some of the older bands. And there's a couple of bands out there that are really super good, and they're actually better than the originals. So you check them on YouTube, and I just sit there and write and watch. And it's just like, whatever. Anyway, what's next on the horizon for you?
I have a new book that I've written called Bloodmark, and it's a brand new character, it's still set in Vancouver because I like setting my books on the coast near water, you know, that fountain thing.
Right.
But it's a completely different story, and it's going to be another series. I've already started outlining a second book, but the first book is now in copy edit stage, and the cover is being designed. And so, yeah, really looking forward to that. That's a really exciting page that I'm going to turn this October.
Excellent. And now the big question is, what's on your nightstand that you're currently reading?
Oh, I am currently reading a book by KJ Howe called Skyjack.
KJ has been on our show a couple times.
Wow. I bet you she's a pilot. Is she a pilot? Do you know?
I don't know if she is. I know somebody that she knows is.
Oh my God.
Oh, maybe she is. I don't know. I never asked her that, so I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, it's an amazing book. I'm really enjoying it. I like Lee Child type thriller books. So, I'm going to be reading a lot more of KJ Howe, that's for sure.
Yeah, she's a good author. She's a good writer. I mean, we've had a lot of Mickey's people on, and she's one of them. And, of course, Tosca, she's been on the show a couple, two, three times. And I mean, we love having authors on that or open up like you did, and just, you know, they know they're going to have fun and just open up and have fun.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what the hell?
That's the whole point. That's
it costs point. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So, well, we do appreciate you giving up your time to come in with us tonight. We are virtually out of time.
Well, it's been terrific. Thank you so much. And thanks for stepping in at the last minute.
Hey, that's kind of what they pay me the extra bag of peanuts for around here. Be right. Available when needed.
That's right. And anyway, Tuscany Bay, we've got a new anthology series called Planetary Series. It's 11 books. If you're interested in science fiction, anthology science fiction, we invite you to go and pick up one or two of those. They're quite interesting. Tuscany Bay, we do a lot of stuff. We're also
two-thirds of the way through with the audiobook versions of those things too.
There you go. And Last Lonely Trail, of course, available in electronic books, soft cover, and hardback now. So it's available in all three venues. Plus, it's going to be available in audiobook. So if you want something to do some night, pick up a copy of Last Lonely Trail. I think you'll get a kick out of it. It's a fun book to read. And your books, don't stop writing. You're a great writer. And make sure that you get a hold of Jerry when these other books come out, and we'll get your book back on the show. I'm not going to guarantee it's going to be this year. I think we are book solid through this year, to be honest with you.
Good for you.
Yeah, it happens every year, you know. But anyway, again, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure having you. And I love your office. I love your office. Love it, love it, love it.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for joining us. Okay, JP, be good. Stay out of trouble.
Okay. Well, no, but okay.
Well, you're just asking for the impossible when you tell an author to stay out of trouble.
Well, I know. They can't do it, but they try. Okay, next week. We have actually this young man interviewed me not too long ago, Dom Brighton. He's got a podcast out of the East Coast, and he'll be joining us next week with his book. I think it's a self-help book, if I'm not mistaken. But Dom will be on with us, and he's kind of a staid, stoic kind of guy. One of these laughers. So we'll see. Anyway, that's for next week. And Richard, thank you so much for jumping in.
Hey, always a pleasure to come on.
And we'll chat next week, of course. And in the interim, I need to know about what happens with your stuff, because Richard is in meetings with producers to talk about one of his books, Reservations.
Yeah, I'll be drinking heavily for the next 24 hours.
There you go. You're my kind of guy. Okay. And for Richard and, of course, Bobby G. Bill, and Mr. Russ Savison, who could not make it, our ever-living producer and engineer, Mr. Ronan Rosner, and, of course, the man who makes it all happen, Mr. Sam Hassan, and LA Talk Radio, we, of course, are out of here.